Welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And tonight I'm joined by Agent 70.
What's up?
And also have with us Dirt from PCN, or Dirt at his Twitter is at PCNDirt, PCN underscore dirt, and he's from popculturenetwork.com.
And usually I'm in the middle, so I feel like kind of out of sorts being off the side tonight.
Yeah, I invited you first tonight.
Oh, first.
I guess I'm always, since I'm the host, they always put the host on the right side, I guess. Yeah, it is. Everything's all thrown off now.
We'll just cancel the show.
People that just listen to the audio replay of this.
Well, I have no idea what we're talking about.
That's why you should go subscribe to the YouTube channel, people. YouTube.com/TheClickNation. And the website is TheClickNation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles, the Click Nation podcast, comic book reviews, and much more. Make sure to follow the Twitter account at TheClickNation. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. We're on Google Plus, where this video podcast is being uploaded right now. Just search for The Click Nation and also join the community, The Click Nation community. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if you ever have any feedback you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. Yeah. So, with all that out the way, this is the part of the show where we discuss comic book news from the week. And I don't have much news, as I said earlier, but what do my co-hosts have that they want to talk about?
Well, go ahead, Agent 70.
You got it. Not a problem. I will start. Some sad news actually came out regarding one of my favorites, a real fan favorite artist. George Perez actually has updated fans on some vision problems he's had. On his Facebook page, he posted a picture of him wearing an eye patch over his left eye, looking very Nick Fury or very piratey. Apparently he's been having some problems and he may need some serious surgery on his eye, but he's still working, you know, he's still trying to draw despite, you know, this injury, this, you know, or this setback. So, hopefully, you know, we send out our best wishes to George Perez, and hopefully he'll get past this and heal up and be better going forward.
Can I share a quick George Perez story?
Sure.
Yes.
Several years ago, he was working on a book called Crimson Plague. Came out in the mid-90s.
Yes.
And I was at Wizard World Chicago one year. And back in those days, you know, they weren't as I don't know, big a deal, I guess you could say. And one of the things I used to do is I would buy a sketchbook before a comic book convention and just walk around and ask, you know, artists, hey, can I have your autograph? And I'd hand them the sketchbook, and a lot of times they'd draw a little sketch because it was a sketchbook, and it was, you know, just kind of a neat thing. So I was wandering around, and I wanted to get George Perez, so I go over to his table, and he's not there. And all that's sitting on the table is this little photocopied book, you know, like a rough draft of a book that he's working on with like pencils and inks, and I think like the word balloons were just kind of drawn in at this point, and it was photocopied, and it was, you know, so people could get an idea of what the book is. And there was nothing else sitting on his table, so I just kind of picked it up and I walked away, and I'm flipping through it and looking at it. And I left the show, went back to the hotel, I was doing whatever, and a couple of the guys came back to the hotel. And I said, yeah, I didn't get to see George Perez. He wasn't at his table. But I did happen to get this. And I pick it up. And they're like, oh, my God, he's been looking for that for, like, the last 3 hours. Like, apparently he went to go to a panel, and he left it sitting on the table. And now he's been unable to find it. And he was supposed to talk about this book or whatever. So I just kind of, like, tucked it away, you know, back in the book bag. And I didn't talk about it for a long
time.
You
boosted it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So then when the book finally came out, I was like, well, I kind of have to buy it because, you know,
since you stole
got a tie
it.
In it. Yeah. So. And I don't think I ever ran into him at another convention.
He's been a pretty faithful attendee of New York Comic Con the last, I would say, at least 4 years. Yeah. So I want, he's probably going to appear this year, but we'll see how
I hope he's not watching the show.
he's the one that drew Crisis on Infinite Earths, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, Wonder I got Woman, his
autograph
reboot.
At MickerCon. Yeah. He signed a bunch of the issues of that series.
Yes, he's Floridian, so I think that's one of his that's one of the cons that he does, even if he's not doing any of the other national cons, he'll do that one because it's in his backyard. So anyway, that's best wishes out to him. Apparently there was a lot of to do on the internet regarding a controversy regarding that pitch page for Harley Quinn, that tryout page that Palmiotti had put out, or that DC had put out without any real tips to it. And a lot of people, especially the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, the American Psychiatric Association, and the National Alliance on Mental Illness issued a joint statement explaining why they're not amused by the contest. I guess some of the content within the description, the page description, the script was deemed kind of offensive or insensitive to those with suffering from mental illness.
Well, basically, it was Harley Quinn, like, sarcastically talking about how she's trying to kill herself. And one of the scenes is her sitting in a bathtub, and she's like holding a toaster, getting ready to drop it in the bathtub and electrocute herself. And she says something else, whatever. And so they're freaking out that people who are suicidal, you know, you can't make fun of this, and you can't, you know, make a big joke out of it and whatever. And I guess they're just not going to like the comic when it actually comes out. You know,
well, the biggest deal was that they provided no context for it. They didn't say that it was a dream sequence.
Well,
or
but even
imaginary
then,
sequence.
Yeah, but even so, then you can blame them for saying you freaked out about it without asking what the context was.
Right, but DC should have put that out, especially if it's you know, a page within a grander story. I think that's really where the mistake was.
Well, no, because it was a artist search type thing.
Right.
So they grabbed a piece of a script and they said, draw it. And the idea was for anybody who wanted to try to draw it to draw it. So it's not going to be in context. You're getting one page out of, you know, I don't know, what is a comic down to these days? 22 pages, 21 22, pages?
Yeah.
So 22. It's like just off the cuff, you should know that you're getting, you know, one fraction of the story. And if you've got a problem with it, then ask a question before you freak out and start, you know, calling everybody names and we're going to boycott. It's like, no, you're not. Sit down.
Right. DC didn't exactly didn't exactly gracefully or artfully respond to this either. So, you know, it definitely wasn't a bright shining moment for their PR and legal team.
to be fair, my PR would have been to blow a raspberry in the phone and hang up on them. So they probably handled it better than I would have.
And didn't some artists go online and give, like, a example of how a person could, you know, take that those scenes and illustrate it where it's not offensive to people. It wasn't Jim Lee, but it was someone else at DC. I forget who it was now. I saw him on Twitter. It was a couple of consecutive tweets where they were, well, you can, instead of looking at it this way, you can look at these scenes as this or that. Just basically giving another viewpoint of how artists could take that description and do something else besides the obvious with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well.
Right. So, you know, whatever, you know, all the hubbub still gives DC some pub about this particular contest. So they get, you know, they get their notoriety, so to speak, and gains attention for this contest. So there's really not much out in news this week. So I guess we can move on unless Dirt has something to add.
Let's see. I've got
the Marvel trying to, I guess, discussing doing a Agent Carter television series. Saw that today.
Who?
Yes.
I didn't actually click on the link, but
Agent Carter. The
I know, but I'm kind of making a joke because it's like who? You know what I mean? It's like if you're going to go out and tell everybody, yeah, we're making a new show based off one of our properties. It's like it's a female and she's a spy. So, oh, Black Widow? No, not the one from the movie. Oh, Silver Sable? No, not the one that was in the Spider-Man books. Oh, it's Agent Carter. Who?
Ah. You know?
I mean, yeah, Ant-Man's getting a movie. What are you going to do?
I guess they first need to see if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is successful.
I don't mind them trying to put Hayley Atwell on the TV more, though. That works for me.
I don't know who that is.
Agent Carter.
That's the actress that played Agent Carter.
Now, when I just said Agent Carter out loud like that, it made me think of Coach Carter.
Actually, I was thinking of Nell Carter from Give Me a Break.
See, we all heard something different. Mm-hmm. But go ahead with what your news you were going to bring up.
Actually, I was going to say that, let's see, who is it? Image announced that they are going to have only one comic shipping the week of Christmas. They've announced what it is. It's a new book called The Saviors. It's from James Robinson, the guy who did Starman and The Shade and is now working on Earth 2. And the artist is Jay Bone, who, if you told me the name, I wasn't at all familiar, but he did Rocketeer, Hollywood Horror, and The Spirit. So then I'm like, oh, yeah, that guy. And he's basically this, like, gas station attendant, like, normal guy, everyday guy, and he stumbles into this massive conspiracy of extraterrestrials working to take over the world, and there's, like, this secret group that's fighting against them, and he gets kind of pulled into the whole, you know, intergalactic battle to save the Earth, whatever. But it's called The Saviors, and it's the only book that Image will be putting out the week of Christmas, which last year, you know, I think DC had one or two books, Marvel had one book, and I think Boom had one book. You know, and it's kind of like their showcase time to put something out to try to draw some attention. So this is the book that Image is using. Because, you know, you're going to walk into the comic book shop and there's nothing, you know, if there's only five books coming out that week, then your book is going to get a lot more attention. So this is the one that Image is betting on to get a whole bunch of readers this holiday season.
Is that a new phenomenon of releasing few books on that Christmas?
Yeah, usually it's a skip week. Traditionally, nobody releases anything. But last year, I don't remember the year before, but it's kind of a new thing where they send out at least a couple books, you know, so there's something on the shelves. But most of the time, it's simply because, you know, one, it's the holiday. So a lot of stores aren't open during that time period. A lot of the shippers, you know, UPS, Postal Service, whoever you're getting stuff through, they're, you know, going to take a day off or a couple days off, depending on where the holiday lands. And, you know, for a comic shop, it's not just you get a comic and you open the box and you set it on the shelf. There's always pull lists and subscribers, stuff you have to do like that, you know. So there's work beyond the fact that you have to be open and physically have your doors open. There's work of getting in the comics. So usually they just skip and they don't send anything, but it's kind of a new thing. They at least send out a couple books. If they ever get to the point where they say that, oh yeah, we're releasing a full schedule on the day after Christmas, then they can go screw themselves, because that's not happening.
Okay.
So that's all I had.
Good contribution.
You're welcome.
Oh, and let's see. Let me bring up the mighty handy comiclist.com so I can see what came out this week. And we have a new, well, not a new, but we have a someone tweeting at me, the Midst Marvel Arts Twitter account is tuning in tonight. What's up, fellas? Or fella, if it's just one person controlling the account tonight.
It could be a lady. She could be an artist.
What's up, Midst Marvel Arts Podcast?
I forget his name. I know he's commented on a post of mine on the website before, of a review before. So I know he's watched before. But he says, this year Marvel is doing Avengers 24.ih, the start of Phase 2 of Hickman's Grand Avengers Plan. Once we find out how Infinity ends, which number 3 came out this week, which we will touch on, and the new Avengers, number 10. Well. As Doug lets out a sigh. Everything can't be a villains month, my friend.
No, actually, I had a long conversation with somebody last night. We filmed an episode of Comaholics, and we opened a bottle of mead, and we were drinking mead last night, and it got a little out of hand, and we show kind of fell apart at the end when we were trying to talk about – we were trying to do Battle of the Atom and Infinity, and it was like, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and we'd been drinking mead, and it was – I'm tired.
And you were saying, I verily.
So let people know where they can go and watch this episode. Well,
it's not up yet because I still have to edit it together, but you can go to popculturenetwork.com, check it out. And also, if you just want to see the comic book content of the Pop Culture Network, you can go to ineedcomics.com, which is the comic book section of the Pop Culture Network. So there you go.
All right, so let's see. Going alphabetical order yet again. I know Boom Studios, I'm going to make a stop. Be prepared, people. I haven't read a lot outside of Marvel this week. Surprise, surprise. And, I mean, there are some indie books I plan on reading, but DC probably won't even read that this weekend. The whole Villains Month isn't too appealing to me. I'm picking and choosing which ones to look at. There actually is a couple of them this week I'll mention just because I will
read them eventually. There's just too many of them.
But Boom Studios, they had Six Gun Gorilla number 4 of 6 came out this week. I've been enjoying this limited series, and I've read, of course, issues 1 through 3, but I'll be checking out 4 this weekend. Did either of you gentlemen have a chance to read it?
No.
Nope.
No. Is there anything in A you wanted to do? You wanted to talk about Dirt under any of the A publishers?
What was A?
Avatar, Sonic, Archie.
Mega Man. Actually, Mega Man, we can talk about real quick.
Oh.
I was having a Facebook conversation with somebody about this the other day. They did the whole Worlds Collide thing where they had Sonic and Mega Man mashed together, and then they – at the end of it, they tried to set the universe right and everything split back apart. And when it did, they each went back to their respective universes and things are a little bit different. And they're not quite the same as they were before. So it's kind of interesting to see some of these subtle changes that they've made. And, for me, I'm just kind of reading through and I'm, it's a story. I'm reading it. It makes sense, whatever. And my son is like, oh, daddy, did you see this? This is different. Oh, daddy, look at that. That is different. Daddy. And my son is like, he picks up on every little detail. And he, I'm kind of jaded in my comic reading. Like I read the comic and then I set it aside. It goes in a box or I delete it, off my tablet or whatever, he reads the same comics over and over and over and over and over, you know, until they get all dog-eared and the cover comes off and everything like that. So for him, this is so exciting to see those changes and to see what's different in the universe. So he was excited for that. Also, the print issue of Sonic Universe came out, but it didn't come out in digital this week. And usually what happens is I give my son the print copy, and then through Diamond's digital comics service that they do through stores, I get the digital copy for myself, and I'll read the digital while he takes the paper copy. But the digital didn't come out this week for whatever reason, so print actually snuck it out a week early. So I actually haven't read it yet, even though my son has, and he's given me the thumbs up on it, so it's apparently worthy.
Pirate Plunder Panic. Okay.
Yep. So there you go. That's the A's.
And Archie is owned by Boom now, correct?
What? No.
It's Archaea.
It's Archaea.
It's Archaea.
One of the A words.
That's funny.
Archaea. A little bit different in your publishing strategies.
Archaea, Archie. It's not really the same thing.
That's funny.
Let's see. More stuff for the kiddies. Adventure Time, number 20, came out from Boom Studios.
You know, I haven't even seen the show in so long. I just usually don't get a chance.
Never watched it.
I've never watched it either. That Adventure. What's the other one? Adventure Time, and there's another.
Regular Show?
Regular Show.
Regular Show.
Haven't watched either.
I enjoy them when I've seen them, but, you know, it's not technically must-see TV, you know. It's like if it's on, I'll watch it, but I don't go out of my way.
Right. Okay.
All right.
Let's see. Dark Horse. They had a new number one from a limited series I want to check out. Buzzkill.
Yeah, that was good.
It was interesting. It was interesting. I read it.
It looks like it's going to be good. And if I have this correct, of course, correct me if I'm wrong, the plot is there's a superhero. He has to do drugs to get his powers.
Pretty much. Yeah, basically he gets drunk. Powers. Once he like starts to get to the point that he gets drunk. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Otherwise, he gets drunk. When he starts to kind of black out and whatever is when his powers really kick in and get super strong.
His blood alcohol level has to be very high.
So he basically kind of blacks out, and when he wakes up, he's beaten up the bad guy or he's, you know, done whatever. Except the problem is that as he's gotten older and he's drinking more and more, it kind of starts to get out of hand. And it's not just, you know, he beats up the bad guy, but of course he lays waste to a couple city blocks and, you know, whatever. So he goes into rehab to he realizes he can't do this anymore. It's too destructive, whatever. So he's going to give up. The problem is he's the most powerful superhero. And so once the supervillains kind of catch wind that he's going to be, going clean and getting on the wagon, then they are very happy about this new development.
And it's only a limited series, I believe.
Four issues. Yeah.
I like that, you know, get stuff out in short supply, and if people like it, maybe stretch out or do another limited series after.
Yeah.
Not too much pressure.
The artwork was a little rough in some spots, I kind of felt. But, it did its job, but there were a couple times when there were fights and stuff going on. You weren't exactly sure what was happening. But overall, I enjoyed it, and it was a good read. And I'll definitely read the second issue.
Anything else from Dark Horse?
Well, there was the final issue of Dream Thief that came out this week. Mm. And this one kind of wrapped up. I mean, it's the final issue, so of course it's going to wrap up everything. It explained how he got these powers, like why he has them. And it has more to do than just the magical mask. There's more to the story behind it. And it explains there are connections between all these things that have been happening, and he's kind of been picking up little hints of it as he goes along. But this one kind of, lays everything out. You know, finally he puts all the pieces together and connects all the dots and, you know, clears everything up. And then it ends, like the final scene is he's not the only one that this has happened to. And it ends with him opening kind of a communication with this other person who similar things have happened. So it kind of opens up the idea of a sequel where he's going to interact with this other person. And like, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to give it away. So I'm desperate. I'm, you know, trying to be vague about it. But it sets up where he's going to have some sort of interaction with this other person who has a connection to him beyond the fact that they just have these powers in common. So there's a lot of like revelations and stuff that happened in this final issue. So I really enjoyed it. I like this series a lot. And if for no other reason, pick up an issue and just flip through it to look at the artwork from Greg Smallwood. He has an unusual style a lot of times where he uses the negative space in between panels to convey action. There's a lot of times where the panels, the shape of the panels are actually the like word balloon. Like if it'll say slam where someone's getting punched, the panel is actually in the outline of the letter slam and you can see the people inside, you know. He does a lot of that kind of stuff to it. But I was particularly paying attention in this issue. I noticed that he does a really good job of the type of stuff. If you ever read the old book, How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way, that came out in like the late 70s. Mm-hmm. He follows that classic style where something that happens in one panel, there's like some motion that draws your eye to the next panel. And then there's some motion, something happening in there, like a deep shadow that draws your eye to the next panel. So the page layout is thought out on a couple different levels besides just having fun and drawing these irregular shapes. You know, it still follows that classic mode of pulling your eye along, you know, the Joe Kubert school of comic drawing. So I love the story. I love the art. This is a great. And now that issue 5 has come out, I actually thought I want to sit down and read the whole series over again from the start.
Oh, that's a good recommendation.
So that's probably going to be my pick of the week.
Cool.
Yeah, off that recommendation, like you said, I may not actually read it, but I'll flip through this week's issue so I can check out the art because I do like that cover.
Yeah.
Dope. All right. That should do it for Dark Horse. Oh, wait. Kiss Me, Satan number 1 came out also.
I flipped through that right before the show. Anyone else take a look at it?
Nope.
I looked at the first couple pages. You know, I was like, okay, I know number 1. I'll flip through to see what the art looks like. It looked good enough, so it's going to make my list of things to look at later.
It's definitely worth reading, at least just, you know, just to give it a shot. You know, it's by Victor Gishler, and he doesn't exactly, you know, my understanding is that he's a novelist. That's my understanding, but my exposure to him in the comic world is when he relaunched or launched a new X-Men book. If you guys remember that with the X-Men versus vampires, where Jubilee got turned into a vampire. Spoilers. Right. So as soon as I saw his name attached to this, I had reservations. Victor Gishler.
Oh, okay. That guy.
So I read through it and it wasn't bad. I don't know if I'll come back to it, you know, for a second issue, but give it a read.
Well, although I pulled up his Wikipedia page real quickly here, and he did do Deadpool Merc with a Mouth, and that was a great series. That was one of my favorite Deadpool series, Merc with a Mouth. So I'll at least give him credit for that one.
I like the phrase on that cover, New Orleans is a werewolf town. Is that supposed to be shocking or something to grab the reader?
No idea.
It's like, okay, cool. I guess.
Maybe if you like werewolves. I don't know.
Or if you're from New Orleans. Nolans. Thank you, Agent 70. DC Comics. Let's see. Action Comics 23.3. Let's Luthor.
Read it.
Do you read it? What do you think?
The story is basically the setup of what you see at the beginning of Forever Evil, or I guess at the end of Forever Evil, whatever. This is the story of, like, you know, day in the life of Lex Luthor, and it kind of ends with that realization that the villains have taken over and that Superman's gone, and he's kind of...
what do I do now?
Yeah, well, he's kind of pissed off that he's not the one who did it.
Right.
It's one of those books where it doesn't really break any new ground, but it's if you are just the casual person that hears about this DC Villains Month thing and you're like, oh, well, I know Lex Luthor, and you pick this one up, then it's going to be perfect for that reader, you know?
Right.
It's a story that's pretty much self-contained for what it is, but because it ties into the bigger story, it's probably going to, you know, make you want to check out some of the other stuff that's going on. So this one, you know, this was all right.
Right. It contained just enough familiar points and images and references that I think even the casual Superman or Lex Luthor fan can connect with this. There were just enough, I believe. So, you know, like you said, it definitely gave you enough to pick up, you know, enough incentive to pick this book up.
Yeah, it was all right.
So it's not a Lex Luthor origin story, is it?
No. It's
much more of a day in the life, you know, this is what I do to get my kicks type of thing. Yeah,
and it shows him being not only
Lex Luthor-y.
the evil businessman, you know, right, with the hostile takeovers and whatever, but also the way he will casually destroy someone's life and the way he throws somebody off the roof of a building.
I wasn't so keen about that part. That was actually, I thought, a little bit forced. But, you know, maybe I'm just not as up on my Lex Luthor characterization as everybody else.
You know what? I just remember two weekends ago, I was at Barnes & Noble out of town, and I read I forget whichever Superman book it was, but it was the Bizarro one.
Uh-huh.
And which basically was... like Lex Luthor seemed like he was the main person in it. I mean, Bizarro was in it too, but it seemed like it was mostly a Lex Luthor story to me. So I felt like I learned more about Lex Luthor from that than I had anywhere else.
Well, and that's kind of the problem with some of these Villains Month books is that they are, it's like, okay, you have to come up with a story for this character, go, as opposed to, hey, I've got a great idea for a story. Right. Give me Lex Luthor so I can tell a story. Give me Bizarro so I can tell a Bizarro story, you know. And that's definitely a problem with some of these books that we'll talk about as we go through this week.
Okay. Make sure I don't skip anything like I normally do. Batman 23.3, The Penguin.
What about Arrow number 11? I don't know if anyone read that.
you know, skip that.
Someone asked me, they go, have you watched Arrow? And I was like, well, I watched the first episode and I've caught a couple things, but I don't really watch it. And they're like, oh, but it's so good. And I'm like, yeah, but there's too many dudes with no shirts on. Like, it's just not.
You got that cut out of the cover.
Yeah, and then this cover came out and I was like, yep, see? It's not for me. I am not their target demographic.
That's funny.
I like it, though. The show is good. I will say that.
That's funny. I think with that they're trying to expand their audience.
Well, maybe they can use it for Pilates class, but anyway.
But did you read Arrow, Agent 70?
No. So Batman, I guess we can move on.
23.3.
The Penguin.
Unless Penguin's naked, gotta shut up.
I don't know. Penguin with no shirt on, I think it'd be a very bad idea.
The Penguin. Like Bugs Bunny used to say, the Penguin.
It was an all right. I mean, you've gotten a lot of history of the Penguin already in the regular Batman and Detective over the last 2 years. So it's like you didn't really need a whole lot of... you know, backstory on him. So they just basically tried to show how he's reacting to this new world where there are no superheroes and kind of finding his place. And he does make himself basically the new mayor of Gotham. And that does tie into some of the other villains books we've seen. And like Riddler, was Riddler last week? In Riddler, you saw how
it's already happened.
You saw in that book how a lot of the villains had carved up Gotham and they were taking control of their own neighborhoods. And this just one of the things they mention in there is that Penguin as mayor has allowed everybody to have their own spot in Gotham. And in this book, you just basically see how Penguin got that spot. So it was just kind of a fill in the hole type of issue, which works to explain, you know, that part of the story. And so you're getting that tie-in with Forever Evil and everything that's going on in the DC universe. But, I mean, at the same time, it didn't really stand out as anything all that remarkable.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to read it, so is it worth reading?
If you're reading the Batman books, then it's part of that story. It's part of the ongoing story. So,
like you said, it fills in a hole.
Yeah, it fills in a hole in the story. But if you're one of those people that you're like, you read like the Lex Luthor one, you got that Day in the Life, well, maybe I'll check out the Penguin one. It doesn't quite stand up as well. Like, there have been better stories about the Penguin previously in the regular Batman.
Gotcha. Okay.
I guess I'll briefly mention the Batman 66, number 3. Which is the collection of the digital? Do they collect digital issues for the Batman 66?
Yeah, it comes out digitally first, and the same thing with Arrow, it comes out digitally first, and then they print it.
So this is the same number three.
No, when you read them online, it's two or three of those online ones make one issue.
Okay,
one
print issue. That was my question. How many of the digital?
Because it comes out weekly online, so. You need a little bit more than the same thing with Batman Beyond Universe number 2 came out this week. That's another online digital story that they're printing. So,
and I am reading the Batman Beyond, what's the digital one, Batman Beyond 2.0. I'm reading that one. I'm actually behind on Justice League. I need to catch up on both of them, because I think Batman Beyond 2.0, number 3, is out already.
Yeah, and because it comes out digitally first and then goes to print, they're way beyond digitally. Like, it's, you know, what would be print, it's several issues of what would be print ahead if you're reading the digital ones.
Okay. But I'm a fan of the Batman Beyond universe, especially from the cartoon show, so... Yeah. I recommend anyone that enjoyed the shows should definitely check out the comics. But now, Batman and Robin 23.3, Ra's al Ghul and the League of Assassins.
Yeah, I stopped to read this because it was Ra's al Ghul, and it's a version of an origin story for him. I don't know how much it differs from any of the previous tellings of his origin. So, you know, beyond that, it was a very, very by the books telling of his origin. But from the point of view of someone who is who seems to be an emissary from the crime syndicate, we're trying to recruit Ra's al Ghul to join them. So basically, I guess Ra's is going to be on the sidelines for most of Forever Evil. And at the end, they say the next is the latest machinations of Ra's al Ghul will unfold in the pages of Red Hood and the Outlaws.
Yeah, so that's where it lost me. Because I read it and I was like, yeah, okay, this is kind of interesting, whatever. Oh, Red Hood? Okay, well, maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. It's sort of like, oh, okay, so he doesn't do much at all in Forever Evil, so that's that. Right, so... thanks for the cue. So, you know, at the end of the day, Ra's doesn't do a heck of a whole lot in Forever Evil because his whole, you know, his family has had a big storyline, obviously, in the recent Bat book, so I guess they're giving him a little bit of a break in terms of the mainstream stuff.
Well, and it also, he's not the type of person that would want to share the glory or share the spoils, you know? So, I mean, in a certain way, it kind of makes sense that he would not join a team of villains, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, he'd be the leader.
He won't be the head, right?
Yeah.
He is the demon's head, after all.
And I should just mention that this should be taking place in Red Hood and the Outlaws Villains Month issue instead of a Batman, because that's where at least the League of Assassins, that's where they're being featured at right now. But no one will go out and buy a Red Hood and the Outlaws 23 point whatever, so taking on a Batman title.
Yep,
that's right.
Which we'll see a little later on here again. But next is Batman The Dark Knight 23.3, Clayface.
Didn't read it.
Yeah, I read this one also. And again, if you look at this cover, there's that same Batman in chains in the background that we saw on a couple of other books. It's that same artist reusing his Batman there. This is another one of those kind of fill the hole type stories, just kind of telling you what Clayface is doing while all of the stuff is going down. So it shows how he's reacting to this world without all of the heroes in it. I was a little disappointed because they had done a big storyline in one of the Bat books that had him and, like, Poison Ivy was using him.
Right.
And pretending she was in love with him so he would, you know, do her dirty work, whatever. And I was hoping that this book would be a confrontation between the two or a setup for that, and it wasn't. Basically, he just wants to prove that he's worthy to join the secret society, the supervillains, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so he is trying to, and it's like, I don't want to, spoil it if there's someone out there who still wants to read it. So he's trying to prove himself to them by trying to come up with a plan and stay one step ahead of what they're trying to do. So, it was all right, but it wasn't much of an origin, and it wasn't much of a resolution of anything they've done with the character recently. It's just another one of those, well, what's he been doing while Forever Evil is going on, and here's where you find out.
You know what, I will say, even though I'm down on the Villains Month, actually, I don't even think that, I was going to say, this is something totally different, but I am looking forward to the limited series stuff coming out of Forever Evil, like the Forever Evil Arkham War and the Rogues, whatever the Rogues one is called, and the Argus story. I'm looking forward to those villain-centric books. But yeah, the villain, just all these 23.70 books aren't appealing to me. Next up, Detective Comics 23.3, The Scarecrow.
And this is another one of what's he doing. You kind of saw in, I can't remember what the other, there was another, maybe it was the Two-Face. I don't remember. There was another villain book that came out a couple weeks ago where Scarecrow pops up and gives the villain the coin and tells them that they can join the society. And this one is telling the same story from the other perspective of Scarecrow. As he's moving through Gotham, you saw in the Riddler how everybody had their own neighborhoods. This is Scarecrow going from neighborhood to neighborhood, and he's been picked by the secret society to hand out those coins to everybody. So when you see him, later they're at the meeting and they all have those little secret society coins, it's Scarecrow is the one that's been chosen to hand them out to everybody. So he has not really taken a whole lot of Gotham for himself, and instead he's dealing as kind of a worker bee for the big bad guys.
It's like Dumbledore's army with the coins.
It's kind of weird.
Alrighty.
Flash, the Rogues.
This I read.
Yeah.
This I read, and I liked it. It was, it definitely had... it told the story of the Rogues. It definitely did not give any short shrift to the origin of the Rogues. It basically featured Captain Cold and how he's the de facto leader of the Rogues, but there's been some issues with that. And I didn't even realize that there was a family bond between himself and one of the other Rogues. What is this lady's name?
His sister. I can't think of her name. But the female that you see on the
right, the female, right, exactly. I don't know what her code name is, but you know, there's actually a pretty compelling story in this book. I don't want to spoil all of it, but it's definitely worth a read, and it leads into what you guys were just mentioning earlier. It leads right into the limited series that they're going to do. Basically, it's the Rogues Rebellion. It's basically the Rogues against the Secret Society and the Crime Syndicate.
Well, and one thing also I will say is that this is a very good tie-in to the regular Flash book, where some of them that feature the supervillains just give you kind of something superfluous with the villains. This one picks up threads from the ongoing Flash story. There are some changes to the status quo of a couple of the characters, and then leads into the new series that's coming out. So if you've been reading Flash, this is one of the ones you've got to pick up. If you're going to be reading their tie-in with Forever Evil, then this is one that you have to pick up. This is one of those that, like, when they do the trade of Flash, you know, they can – this is definitely one that has to be in there, as the same way with the Reverse Flash.
Yeah, I was going to say, I guess the two out of the three are really important.
Yeah, I was going to say, Grodd didn't really feel like it was that big of a deal, but Reverse Flash and the Rogues, they tie in so well with the series. It's like they got to, you know, keep those in there.
Agreed. I definitely agree with you on that point. Like you said, those two particular point issues felt really integral and really relevant to the main story. So, you know, that made it a lot easier to read, to be perfectly honest.
The
DC books that I've been reading, I definitely want to read the tie-in villain issues for those, since it's at least. From what I can tell, it seems like the majority of them tie into the main series, like The Flash and
Green Lantern. Except for Justice League. Stay away from the Justice League.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We will get to that.
Yeah, I'm reading the Justice League stuff, but so far I've heard not all the villain stuff tie in. So, but Green Lantern 23.3.
I wanted to read this. I didn't have a chance to.
I did. The weakness on this is really the artwork.
That's too bad.
Yeah, they. I don't know if it's just because they were doing so many different things that they reached out because they had to do. You would think that creative teams from other books, you know, you would say that there is no
off week or off month.
Yeah, like, some of the side books, like you said, with Red Hood and the Outlaws, there is no Red Hood and the Outlaws, so they could use that creative team, you know, to do whatever book. This is Green Lantern. You know, they could have used the guys doing Green Lantern Corps. You know, to do this book, but for whatever reason they didn't. And the artwork really suffers in this. A lot of it looks rushed. A lot of it looks kind of half finished. It works in a couple spots. Like there are some times because it's Black Hand, so he's bringing people back from the dead. There's zombies. And there are a couple times where it works with kind of the gore and the anatomy and whatever. But there's some of the times where it just kind of looks scribbled on the page, and it's kind of a shame. As far as the story goes,
yeah, there's nothing. I'm looking at it now. There's nothing very, very dramatic or very special about the art. You know, it's definitely grounded in reality, which is much different from what you normally get in a Green Lantern book.
Let's see. I'm trying to figure out.
Hold on, it's on the third page. Oh, no, it's actually later. Wait, who wrote it? Charles Soule?
Soul?
No,
he's been doing a lot of work for DC.
Right, and Alberto Ponticelli is the penciler.
Yeah, I don't know who that is. Black Hand is one of those characters where he dies and he comes back and he dies and he comes back. And, I mean, that's part of the black energy is the, yeah, he comes back from the dead. He kills people and he comes back from the dead. This is, you know, explaining how he comes back again. It really is the Black Hand special. You know, he's back in the DC universe, and this is how he gets there.
This is his first appearance in the New 52, correct?
Well, yes and no, because technically Blackest Night still happened.
And actually, he showed up during the last Geoff Johns run, because didn't Hal and Sinestro die?
Yeah, they die and they go into the black zone. And
he was in there.
Yeah, okay. But I mean, he wasn't really all over the place or anything. But, you know, it was okay, but it was one of those, I got done reading it and I was just kind of like, meh. Like, I could have not read it and been just as fine, you know. Like, I didn't hate it. It's not like Dial E, where I was mad at myself for having wasted the time on it. But, you know, it wasn't anything special.
Okay. Next up, Justice League 23.3,
Dial E. Oh, my God. I'm looking through this now. They had an artist do each, like, they had a separate artist do every page of the book. Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness.
You said they had someone different do each page?
Yes.
It's because the...
It looks so disjointed. Oh, my
God. Yes, it's
disjointed.
Part. The big thing with, you know, the dial is you grab the dial and you... It's a rotary phone dial, so you dial in a name and you get...
Yeah, like these kids know what that is.
Kids these days.
Jeez.
But they, you know, they tried doing an ongoing series in the New 52, and it's been canceled, and they were trying to kind of tie in with all of that. But the problem is they were trying to kind of have fun with it, but when they had fun with it, it lost focus. And they got to a point where they were trying to introduce a new character on every page and they were trying to make the story flow, like as the power is jumping from person to person. And it just, like, I got angry, like, reading it.
Wow. I'm
like, this is hard to read. It doesn't make a lot of sense. There are some pages of artwork where you're like, well, that's okay. And some pages where you're like, well, that's terrible.
Wow.
And by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, it doesn't make sense. I'm not satisfied. I'm not happy that I spent my time reading this. And, you know, I want my $4 back.
Wow. Give me my money back.
That's really bad.
So,
wow. Like, if we have clicks of the week, I gotta come up. We have to come up with the name for the you know, whatever's the worst book that we read this week. You know, we gotta come up with the worst of award too, because this is pretty bad. Oh my God, I even read this and I want to throw this into that yeah, category.
Well, don't.
Oh my goodness, thank you.
This is the Gigli of comics.
Oh,
we'll never get creators to come on the show now with worst of the week.
Actually, it's funny because right in the middle of the cover, there's a candy bar that says Crapple.
Oh my!
And it's like, well, that should have been my clue right there.
This has to be a pseudonym. This is written by China Mieville. And if that's a real person, I apologize.
But you
real word up, I apologize ahead of time.
So does
I
this
apologize profusely?
Does this Dial E have anything to do with the Dial H book?
Yes.
Which I know nothing about.
Yeah, it's just the idea that because the villains have taken over, they're going to say E for evil instead of H for hero.
Goodness gracious.
But it's the same. It's the same thing. It's the rotary phone dial, and they, you know, you. Like you're dialing a phone number, you dial in a name and you get powers based on the name. It's just they wanted to have an evil twist on it because of Forever Evil. And this one just didn't work.
That's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. All right, moving on. Let's get away from this, please.
We have more Justice League, quote unquote, goodness. Justice League Dark 23.2 Eclipso.
I remember the Eclipso books when they came out. Was it like late 80s, early 90s?
Where they had the plastic gem glued to the first issue?
Yes, yes. I remember that, but I don't remember reading much of it, so I can't really say if this is any different or good or bad. I didn't read this. Did you get it?
I started to and I stopped.
Oh, yeah, that's a bad
sign. This was another one that I just couldn't...
That's a bad sign.
Yeah. Well, and part of it may have been that I was just suffering villains fatigue at this point, because this is the last one that I attempted to read. And at that point, I think I've
shame. You tried Dial E for hero before E for evil before this.
Yeah. Like, I think now I went through the list last night and I think I've read like 26 of the villains books that have come out.
That's dedication.
You're a good man.
And it's starting to wear on me.
You're a good man.
So this one I've got.
Or an evil man.
Is it just one more week to go? Or two more? I'm assuming it's the whole month of September, right?
Yeah, I think there's two more.
Jeez. Oh my gosh.
Justice League of America 7.3 Shadow Thief.
This one was okay.
Okay.
This character had been in a couple issues of Savage Hawkman, so it kind of, you know, you get reacquainted with the character a little bit. You knew some of her origin from Hawkman, and they kind of retread it a little bit, but then also, you know, bring you up to date with Villains Month, you know, what's she doing during Villains Month? And part of her thing is she started out as a spy for Israel, for the Mossad. Or Mossad, or however you pronounce the Israeli special forces.
I think it's Mossad.
And so she had been part of that group when she originally started, and that's where her like powers came from. It was something that they found and developed and whatever. So I at least found it interesting and intriguing a little more because they did have a bit of that spy world influence in it instead of it just being here's a superhero fighting other superpowered people. You know, whatever. And she's one of those characters because she is it's funny because Shadow Thief, she's in that shadowy world. They kind of retooled the character. So she is a, you know, special ops type of agent. So she's not necessarily a villain for Villains Month, but she's not necessarily a hero because she will totally kill an entire room of people if it gets the job done. You know, she's an anti-hero type of character. So it was fun. It was all right. I enjoyed it. I didn't have any problems with it. You know, I don't know if I'd say it's one that you definitely have to read, but if you get some free time and you want to read something, this is, you're not going to hate yourself for reading it like some of the other books.
And the Ms. Marvel.
Yes, arc. We're all trying to avoid self-hate here.
And the Ms. Marvel Arts Twitter account says, I actually enjoyed the Shadow Thief issue. Apparently, it was based off DeFalco's original female plan for Venom.
Wow.
Did not know that. Because I don't know anything about the Shadow Thief either. So, off of Dirt's recommendation, I'll add that to the list when I get to it to check out. Superman 23.3, Hell.
I read this because his name is Hael.
I remember hearing that.
Really, his name is what?
Was it War on Hell or whatever? Hell.
Hell on Earth.
Hell on Earth. God. Ran entirely too long.
I didn't read that. This is my first exposure to the character, so it took a little bit of. It definitely took me some time to get accustomed to, you know, what this character is about. But I kind of got a kick out of the story. They lost me right at the end, though.
Yeah, well, because it's like he goes back in time, but then right at the end, he does some things that would definitely change the time stream.
Right.
So I'm guessing he must be on a parallel. He didn't go back in time. He jumped dimensions would be my guess.
Yeah,
because at the end of Hell on Earth,
72 or something.
Well, yeah, I remember reading from interviews that there's going to be another crossover involving him with what, Superman, Supergirl, and Superboy, I think. Where they all go back to Krypton, back in the past to when Krypton was still around, and involves Hell and whatever.
My goodness. It was, you know what was funny is that this issue actually read pretty well up until they took that swerve at the end and I just got lost.
Yeah.
So at least another one of those where, like we said, the dot issue ties into the main, at least an upcoming main story.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, it does continue from Hell on Earth, because at Hell on Earth, at the end, he gets pulled into, like, this, you know, vortex, this black nexus, and you think that he's kind of sucked into a black hole or whatever, and instead you find that he's gone back in time. But because of what he does, either everything he's done going back in time gets undone, or it's a parallel universe. I'm not sure exactly how it works. So, I mean, it's one of those things where I have to see where it goes before I can really determine how much I liked it or hated it, because I'm not sure how it ties in.
Right. It says, don't dare miss Action Annual number 2. So,
Action Comics. I won't. I won't dare.
Don't dare miss it.
How's the art?
It was good.
It's okay. It's good because Jerry Ordway does the breakdowns. I want to see who's doing the finishes. But the breakdowns are pretty.
Was it Dan Jurgens or somebody like that?
Oh, my bad. I sometimes mistake it too. It is Dan Jurgens.
Okay, yeah.
So when they say breakdowns and finishes, that means Breakdowns is pencils and finishes is inks?
No, Breakdowns is normally very, very loose pencils.
It's like they draw the oval for the head, but they might not draw in all the details, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, they'll draw like very, very spare details. That's my understanding.
Okay. I was about to ask a bunch of other stuff, but I'll just skip it. Like, why even do all that and not finish it? But whatever. Well,
probably because he was working on something else. I mean, I would guess that he was working on something else, and they asked him to come in and work on this book. So he, you know, pencils it out kind of loose and then hands it off to somebody else to do all the cleanup and finishing on.
Gotcha. Swamp Thing 23.1.
Anybody?
Arcane?
Swamp Thing.
Wait, say something dirt.
I did not get to this one. Okay. Although the 3D cover was pretty cool when you see this one in person.
Yeah, the cover looks kind of nice. I mentioned that 2 weeks ago, I was at Barnes & Noble and I was flipping through some. Since I was there trying to waste some time, I took the time to go through some of the Villains Month books from like the previous week that I had missed. So there was the Bizarro I read. And another one, even though it wasn't a Villains Month, I read, I guess it was Teen Titans 23. And, you know, Teen Titans was a book I wanted to like and had to give it up. And I was like, okay, I'm here.
Not the Trigon one? But the Trigon?
Well, no, this was just issue 23.
Oh, the regular 23.
Yeah. And it was like they were wrapping up stuff, I guess, for the break for the month. And I see Beast Boy is a member of the team now. I did not know that. And one of those new characters they created left the team. Bunker, maybe? Bunker and someone else left the team. I forget who. But I'm saying all this to say that this Deathstroke Villains Month, I will read because Deathstroke seems like an interesting character, and he was cool on the Flashpoint movie. So,
I liked the new 52 Deathstroke book until they brought in Rob Liefeld, and I think that kind of killed it. You know, this is actually the first one I read this week.
What'd you think?
I liked it because it had Deathblow.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the old Jim Lee assassin?
Oh, he's in this?
Yeah. Pages.
When Jim Lee wanted to try to mimic Frank Miller, but that's another story.
it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. But, I mean, as far as this goes for Deathstroke, if you read the story of him, you know about him and his kids and that whole messed up world that he lived in and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And this touches on all of that, and it kind of recaps some of that stuff. So if you didn't read that series, which apparently a lot of people didn't because it was canceled, then this is kind of what you need to, you know, reestablish the character for a lot of people.
Right.
They
probably told this version of Deathstroke's origin, because this is definitely reworked from what I know from, unfortunately, what I know is pre-Crisis. But they definitely reworked the origin a lot in this. I don't know if this is what they established in the previous Deathstroke
movie. Yeah, this series ties in with Team 7 and the Deathstroke book. I mean, nothing in here
is new.
It doesn't contradict any of that.
Okay.
There are some things that are a little different. As far as like fleshed out certain things that you didn't know about before in the past or whatever.
Gotcha.
And I enjoyed it. I mean, like I said, I like the Deathstroke character and I like the series. So I enjoyed this book. And because I like the character, I might actually pick up some Teen Titans just to kind of see where he goes with that book. And hopefully they won't lose me again.
All right.
Oh, so this is, of course, where I ask, how was the art?
It's okay. It's nothing to write home about.
I mean, well, but it wasn't bad.
And there's a couple of pretty shoddy. There's actually some off perspective.
Well, part of the problem,
and it's so rare for me to see.
There were three different artists, so I guess it depends on which section you're paying the most attention to. And the three people I don't recognize. Although Art Thurbert did inks in one section. So that's probably the one section that I paid attention to that I was like, hey, this is pretty good.
It's probably the sharpest because he's been inking for a long time.
Yeah. He's done a lot of great stuff. So yeah,
he's a pro.
I have a sketch from him.
Okay.
I mean, I was just going to say that if you're going to get into Teen Titans, I'm going to guess that that's something you're going to want to read if you didn't read Deathstroke, because it looks like he's going to be a part of that book going forward.
I hope so. And yeah, I think I'm going to give him another go around.
Although it's funny to me because one of the things they did in the New 52 was they gave him a new outfit. They kind of redesigned it a little bit, so it looked more like battle armor as opposed to kind of like the funky supervillain thing. And this whatever he's wearing on the cover, he does not wear in the book and is not, you know. I mean, he does have that half-orange, half-black mask that covers one eye. And you do find out how he lost the eye, so they tell you that part. But, I mean, that's not really how he looks.
And he also made a recent appearance in issue of the Green Team.
Yeah, which was great.
Yeah, that was actually its last good issue, I think, because I didn't enjoy the one after that.
Oh, number four.
Was it four? Yeah. But
anyway,
Wonder Woman 23.1, the Cheetah.
I made a point to read this. Dirt, did you read this?
No, I didn't.
Well, I'm not that familiar. You know, I haven't really been reading Wonder Woman all that closely. I know that it's gotten some fairly positive reviews online in terms of what they're doing with the character. I don't really know the Cheetah's origin. I don't know how much they've really changed it. But they do delve into the origin a lot in this issue. This issue is on the gory side. So if you're into, you know, people getting ripped up, you know, and basically gutted, read this issue.
Well, I am.
I'm not so much. So, and I happen to read a lot of Wolverine. So, what are you going to do? There's a couple of interesting bits in this story. It's definitely worth reading if you're a Wonder Woman fan. I didn't particularly care for the story so much, but the art was more than passable. Let me see who the artist is.
And I have recently started reading Wonder Woman, and
Victor Ibanez. I'm sorry. Victor Ibanez is the artist, so yeah, I give him some credit. This is actually a well-done, well-rendered book. Go on, Tim, I'm sorry.
I'm just saying I've been reading, I think, the last three issues of Wonder Woman, and I've read in a couple of interviews that Cheetah is supposed to be playing a big role in Forever Evil, I think.
Right.
Or she's supposed to be stepping up pretty and be kind of a prominent
stepping
role.
Stepping up in class, yeah.
Yeah. So that's it for DC. Anything from Dynamite anyone wants to mention?
No, didn't read any of this. Dirt?
No.
Okay.
Aww.
Let's see. IDW Publishing. I see Doctor Who number 13. People seem to like Doctor Who.
Did you read it?
Nope, I didn't read any of this stuff, sorry.
See, I'm trying to think IDW. Oh, I did.
Thunder Agents number 2, maybe?
Actually, no, I wanted to. I didn't have a chance to get to Thunder Agents yet. But I did read Ghostbusters.
Something strange.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, Ghostbusters is one of those that when they relaunched it, I don't know, I think last spring, they started with another new number one, and right. I thought I'd give it a shot, and I don't think it's been staying on schedule has been part of the problem, but you know, I enjoyed it, and from what I've heard, it's really not any different from the old series. They just knew that if they did a new number one, people would pay attention. So it's been a while since I read one. I kind of fell behind a little bit, so I got caught up this week. and then read the new issue. And I enjoy it. Like, the way they do the characterizations, I think, is really good. They brought in Kylie, who was one of the characters on Extreme Ghostbusters, the short-lived cartoon that came out, I think, in the, like, the late 90s. She's part of the team. They had a backup story because they franchised the Ghostbusters, and there's a team in Chicago. So they had a short backup story featuring the Chicago guys that was a lot of fun. So I just really enjoyed it. Like, as soon as I got done with this, I was like, because like I said, I got caught up. So I read a couple issues and then read this one, and I wanted more. Like, I wanted to keep going on the train. I was kind of sad that this was the most recent one and I had to stop. So I'm looking forward to continuing on with the series.
Cool. Shout out to Classic Material, who introduced us to Ghostbusters, I think, when that first number one or very early on in this latest relaunch came on the Comic Book Chronicles and talked about it. So we miss you, Classic.
Rest in peace.
No.
My buddy Joe Dama, continue.
There was a Animated Turtles, if anyone's watching the cartoon, they did have that tie-in. And then my son has decided he likes classic Popeye. And it's weird because not the new one as much, but this one that reprints the old ones from like the, you know, the 40s or whatever, where these are coming from. He enjoys these a lot. So he's gotten into the classic Popeye reprints as opposed to the new stuff. So that was out this week.
That works.
Okay.
Oh, so no Thunder Agents.
I know Eclectic, who, of the Eclectic Relaxation website, I know he read Thunder Agents number one and liked it. So
I liked one. I want to read two. I just haven't had time.
I flipped through the first one and I got about halfway and I was like, nah. Just wasn't for me. Okay, so that's Dark Horse, or IDW, I'm sorry. Image Comics has a couple things I'm going to check out this week. But, of course, I haven't had a chance to. I don't need to mention Bounce anymore, do I? I don't think anyone here is reading that.
Mm-mm. No.
I like that cover, though.
Yeah.
Cool cover.
I tried reading Cyberforce number 6, but I haven't read any Cyberforce in a while, so I kind of got lost in it.
You didn't read any of the free ones?
I did, but I think I got up to number 3, but this is a number 6, so there's a bit of a gap. I haven't really been caught up with the I don't know, when did they start being when did they stop being free? With number 4 or 5, something like that?
I don't remember. I think it may have been with 5, but I'm not sure. I tried reading the first one when they came out, but I just could not get into it.
It wasn't terrible. I thought the first 2 or 3 free ones were pretty good. The art was okay. It's Koi Pham doing it. I noticed that the art on this was pretty iffy. So, no offense to the artist, but...
Morning Glory is number 31, the new series I'm enjoying, even though it's only been one issue I've read.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm not favorite this.
Nice.
But I haven't read this, but I will. It's actually I think Buzzkill number 1 and then Morning Glory is 31 is our next up in my queue to read.
All right.
I have been reading Mind the Gap. I just have not read the latest one yet. I do like the series overall. It's a mystery. Basically, the whole thing started with this girl who she's like attacked on a subway platform, and there's no witnesses except that somehow she knows it was like a guy wearing a hoodie. And so you meet like all of her friends, but all of them like at one point or another like – owned a hoodie or borrowed a hoodie from somebody or whatever. So it's like you didn't really know who it was. So it's as she goes, like she lost her memories of, you know, what happened during the attack. And as she goes, she's slowly uncovering almost in like a primetime soap opera, you know, it's a little over the top sometimes, but she's finding all these like hidden secrets between different members of her family and, you know, stuff that was going on. And it's at least the mystery to it is intriguing. And I haven't, a lot of times when I read stuff like this, you find plot holes because it's always like, well, who done it, you know? And a lot of times it seems like they contradict themselves in order to throw in a swerve and stuff like that. And this one, I haven't really run across anything like that. So it's just been this kind of building, flowing story with all this drama and intrigue. And so that, you know, kind of soap opera side kind of takes over, and it's kind of enjoyable in a guilty pleasure kind of way.
Because I want to say what issue was this? This was issue...
This is 14.
14. Must have been 13 or 12. I had it laid out. I was like, I'm going to just jump in this and see how it is, but of course...
Yeah, I don't think it's really made to be jumped into.
Other books got in the way, and I never got a chance to flip through it.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's kind of like this unfolding mystery, so you kind of have to start at the beginning and go along with it.
I will say the art looked nice inside.
Yeah, it is very well done.
Yeah, the art, and when I say art, I also mean the colors, because it's very bright, which I like. Okay. Savage Dragon 191. I'm slowly catching up to Savage Dragon, and when I say catching up, I mean I jumped back in on like issue 186, I want to say, something like that. But I've kind of fallen behind recently.
Is this the issue where he bites the bullet, or did that happen already?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. All I know is his son's going to take over the title, and is Savage actually going to die? Is that how they're getting rid of him?
I thought that's what we announced like a month or two ago, something like that. It was in the previews, or it was in the news.
Yeah.
We stopped ordering this at the store, and nobody's noticed.
Oh, no.
That's why I don't have a cover for it.
I was going to say no cover.
We ordered zero copies of this. We stopped ordering it like a year and a half.
Wow.
Maybe 2 years ago, and not one single person has asked, hey, do you have Savage Dragon? Or where is Savage Dragon? I can't find it. Nobody. It's never come up.
Damn. The
Mitz Marvel Arts says, I'm currently 40 pages in on the second Mining the Gap trade. Fantastic series. Kudos to Agent 70. I don't know anyone else who reads it.
Hey, Agent 70 doesn't read it.
Yeah, I don't read it.
I think he meant
dirt.
I'm sure he meant dirt.
Come on, buddy.
So, see? Someone else that reads Mining the Gap. Yeah, I think I'll just replace trying to read Mining the Gap with Morning Glories, since they've kind of not restarted, but they have a nice jumping on point with that previous issue. Zero number one.
I tried reading this right before the show and didn't work. I'm going to try to read it again. It seemed interesting, but it lost me halfway through.
I read the whole thing kind of in a way where I read the first little bit kind of in depth and then kind of skipped ahead and then kind of read the next little part in depth and then kind of skipped through to the end. And it just, he's a guy who works for the military, and not all people in the military are bad people except for every person that he runs into.
Right.
You know, and it's just kind of one of those things where.
Right. And there's enhanced soldiers running around.
Yeah. And it's like, hey, buddy, intrigue. Where are you going? And he's like, oh, I can't deal with this right now. So he shoots the guy and hides the body. But then he feels really bad about it. But he thinks that guy may have been kind of a jerk, so he's kind of okay with it. You know, I don't know. I just kind of,
It was kind of a tough read. And I think Dirt's comments are pretty much on, you know, the same as mine, in the same vein.
Oh, and Mitz Marvel Art says, whoops, my bad. Kudos to Dirt.
Well, thank you.
There you go.
And let's see now. Yeah, give applause. Applause for everyone. Marvel Comics Cable and X-Force number 14, which is the end of the first, I guess, story arc for the team. And I think sees the end of Salvador LaRocca on art, because...
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's sad.
That stinks.
And I have the artist's name who's supposed to take over, because he tweeted back at me. Gerardo Sandoval. Hopeless Dent said, had tweeted before the show tonight that I guess he had got some art back for issue 15. And, you know, even though he'll be sad to see Salva, as he called him, go, Gerardo is putting in some good work. So, but this issue, the Uncanny Avengers take on Cable's X-Force. They're trying to break him out of the mansion. And Hope comes back from the future with a way to cure and save Cable's life because his powers are growing out of control.
Yeah, the return of the Scimitar.
So it's kinda, the ending was anticlimactic, I will say.
Just a little.
I was just going to ask, what's up with this gratuitous booty shot on the cover?
Yeah, I did notice
there's
it.
There's two of them. There's another one inside.
Oh, is there? Okay.
Yes, there's
at least it's
inside.
Consistent.
I hadn't noticed until you put the picture.
You noticed the one inside, right, though?
Oh, my
goodness. We have to work on what's...
Is it Hope Again? was it Hope Again? I should be reading, man.
Was I'm too Hope? Focused on the story. I'm not paying attention to the artwork.
Was it Hope? 70 on the inside?
Yeah, there's a pretty gratuitous shot on the inside.
Yeah, like, why couldn't her cape be covering that up?
Oh, there's a joke in there about the cape too, if you recall.
Yeah. So I saw, of course, that was in the book. It was written in the book, so I saw that part. All right. Captain Marvel number 16, which is an Infinity tie-in.
Yeah, this did you guys read this?
No.
Well, essentially, you know, I hate to use the essentially or essential a number of times, but this has also become sort of essential reading to fill in the blanks on what happens when Captain Marvel's team gets captured in Infinity number 2. And there's some explanation regarding the return of her binary powers. So there's actually a couple of different things happening in this book that are pretty important to a better understanding of what's happening in Infinity. So I recommend that you read it if you're following along with Infinity.
Can you quickly explain her binary powers?
Well, they touch on it in this issue, but basically, and how they're explaining it is that she's tapping into the energy of the black hole they're about to all be sucked into. And so she's using that to, you know, and she's basically funneling power from the black hole. And in the issue, they explain that the further away they get from the singularity, the black hole, the less able she is to draw upon that power. And the reason why it sort of reemerged at that time was that they were fighting so close to a black hole, and she was able to tap back into that part of her power. I'm not so sure if I agree with if I'm so happy with this particular explanation. It seems kind of convenient. It'd be nice if they would just, you know, boost her power back up to maybe near binary levels, because back then she was a real powerhouse when she was hanging out with Starjammers.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know if I'm gonna read this or not.
I think you should give it a read, because like I said, if you're following along with Infinity and you want to fill in, you know, any blanks, you should read this. This is much more integral. This is a lot like those Flash 23-point, you know, whatever issues, where this is actually, I think, pretty integral to reading, to getting the full story of Infinity. You know, there's crossovers we're going to get to this week that are supposedly, you know, Infinity tie-ins that bear no bearing. They have no bearing. They carry no weight when it comes to like understanding the bigger story in Infinity.
And Mitz Marvel Arts asks, which Infinity tie-in do we think is better, Revenge of the Symbol or Captain Marvel? Both are DeConnick books. I'd say they're almost equal. At least last week's or the last months that I read.
I think the Captain Marvel ones are better.
Yeah, I didn't care about Spider-Woman's story.
Yeah, I think that's basically where I make the differentiation, is that the Spider-Woman story was pretty I wasn't all that interested in, but the Captain Marvel story I was pretty interested in.
Daredevil 31.
This is so well written. This is so well done. You guys read this?
I haven't got to it yet.
I read it like 2 weeks ago whenever we got the first thing from Marvel, but I have not been reading Daredevil regularly. So I wasn't 100% sure of everything that was going on. Mm-hmm. But when I got to the end of it, I was rather shocked. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. I don't know. Is that like...
Yeah, it's a heck of a cliffhanger.
Well, it's one of those things where you're looking at it and it's showing you something. And you're thinking, well, obviously what I'm looking at is not really what I think I'm looking at. This has got to be some setup for something else going on.
Right.
So... I mean, I'm at least intrigued to read the next one because I want to know, like, what actually happened. And, right. And you know, and I'm trying not to spoil it either.
That's no, exactly. I didn't want to, I just, my notes basically say, you know, this is such a well-written book. You know, the story sort of ripped from the headlines. You know, the storyline itself was sort of ripped from today's headlines. And, you know, there was a heck of a cliffhanger at the end of the book. So, you know, if I don't know if this is the best book for a new Daredevil reader to pick up. If you want to get into Daredevil, I would suggest that you go back
Although,
and read
the last arc
at least.
Yeah. I will say, though, that the one thing, now that you mentioned that rip from the headlines, I had to think about it for a minute because I was like, wait, what are you talking about? Oh, now I remember that whole court case. Right. That was a little kind of ham-handed. I just kind of felt like that was a little overdone. Because it's one of those things where he definitely has an opinion on something, so he's sure. making things as clear as a bell on his without any reasonable doubt.
Sure.
And you know, again, I don't want to like give it away if someone hasn't read it yet or anything, but I just kind of read that and I was a little like, all right, you know, all right, come on, you know.
Well, you know, he is the writer; it is his pulpit or soapbox, so.
Anyway.
But it was. I thought it was well written, and it definitely moved the story along. And yeah, you know, if you haven't been reading,
it's the shocking twist at the end, though, that kind of gets you and you know makes you want to get the next issue.
Okay, I'll add that to I'll bump that up on my list for the weekend because I have been reading Daredevil probably for the last 4 or 5 issues now.
Well, at least read the last like 6 pages.
Gotcha. Infinity number 3 of 6, which I reviewed on theclicknation.com and popculturenetwork.com. So, more stuff with space and Earth and
if I can bring a slightly different perspective into this, because I am not reading any of the tie-in books,
oh,
so I am
screwed.
Not reading Avengers.
Yeah, no. Well, go on.
I'm going to say I'm not reading Avengers. I'm not reading New Avengers. I'm not reading Avengers Assemble. I'm not reading Captain Marvel. I'm just reading Infinity. And so the story that I'm getting is the Avengers are in space, and they're fighting stuff, and they have these problems. But meanwhile, back on Earth, the important stuff is happening with Black Bolt, and here's his story versus Thanos. Because that's really what it feels like to me. It's like everything that's happening in space with the Avengers is – just to keep them distracted and keep them away from Earth so that Thanos can have this storyline with Black Bolt, and that's the important stuff, and that's where everything you're going to care about is going to come from, and everything in space is just kind of like busy work.
See, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say quickly, I agree with you. Even though I am reading New Avengers and Avengers, yeah, because we know what's coming out of Infinity is the Inhumanity, whatever era, and Inhumans being born or created across the globe. So that's the important story because of basically just trying to plant all the seeds to get up to that point. So that really is the important story. And maybe the conclusion of this will have some kind of ramifications over the cosmic books or the cosmic portion of the universe. But like something else I think that's hurting this is Marvel has pumped up how important Guardians of the Galaxy and Nova are, yet neither one of them is crossing over into this until next week's Nova, I believe, is finally tying into it. And Guardians of the Galaxy missed a whole month. Because the artist Sarah Pichelli, I think, was sick, so I guess they decided to skip a month. But that next issue of that comes out next month. And last time we saw Guardians of the Galaxy, Peter Quill was going off to have a discussion with Thanos, or ask for his help, I think. So between now and then, he's found the force, the black cult obsidian or whatever, and he's invading Earth already. But right, yet right. Now we're back seeing him and Peter Quill talk.
Right. That's a little off. Well, I think I've said this before. This is now the third issue of Infinity. We have to stop thinking of Avengers and New Avengers specifically as being tie-in books. They're not tie-in books. They're literally parts of the whole. You can't look at them as tie-ins so much as parts of the whole, because Hickman even puts it in that funky diagram.
Yeah.
You know, like you have to
in the back.
Exactly. Like the books that are included in that diagram have to be read. And so I don't think that you really can call them tie-ins, or in the traditional way that we think of tie-ins, where tie-ins are traditionally how the regular, universe is affected by this one particular event. You know, these books that are on that diagram are basically parts of the whole, and you have to read them. So basically the Infinity event is told in the Infinity book, miniseries, Avengers and New Avengers, period. So you're not getting, you're doing your, you know, if you're interested in the story, you have to read these books. It's not, they're not actually tie-ins. They're literally parts of the whole.
Yeah, that's kind of the experiment that I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to specifically stay away from those tie-in books and stick.
Yeah, but the thing is, I think you're, well, no, but I think the mistake is in looking at them as tie-ins.
Yeah, the point is that this is the big event book. When they put out the trade, are they going to put out Infinity 6 issues in one trade, or is it going to be Infinity Avengers, New Avengers, 13 books in one trade? You know what I mean?
I hesitate to speculate on this, because obviously this is a business decision for them more so than what the complete story would be. In my opinion, they would behoove themselves. It would be in their best interest to put it out according to the diagram.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I'm trying to do the experiment of not
I think
reading
it's a faulty
any of those
experiment.
Books.
I think there's a faulty premise in that.
Actually, the experiment isn't faulty, because I mentioned in my review, yes, because I mentioned it as a plus and a minus, because it's kind of, it works both ways. Yes, you can read the Infinity by itself. You get the gist of it. But New Avengers and Avengers help get the broader story. So you could take it either way. And Mitch Marvel Art says, well, going back to Daredevil, he says, Mark Waid has never been one to hold his tongue on issues, but at least he's witty when he shares his thoughts. And on Infinity, he says, our podcast isn't touching Infinity until it's completed, but I'm loving it while Brian, who's one of the hosts on the show, isn't a fan. P.S. Black Bolt FTW this issue.
Yeah.
And that's something, I'm going to say that I've never, ever, ever, ever cared about the Inhumans, but I am intrigued by them now. So Hickman Mumbo Jumbo has done at least this right.
Although I have to say, I'm interested in the Inhumans as far as this storyline goes with their face off with Thanos, but I don't know that I care about them enough that I want to read an ongoing Inhumans book. Like, I don't know if there's enough of a hook there to make me want to jump into. Maybe that'll change at the end of six issues of Infinity. But, I mean, as for now, it's like, okay, well, I'm reading this story. And then once it's done, in my mind, the Inhumans are going to get cataloged back in their little drawer, and I'm not too worried about them again.
Oh, Marvel will make sure that you're forced to care about them, because they'll be shoved in every book you read for the next 12 months.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, just real quick, my thoughts on this issue. I enjoyed this. This is actually my pick of the week. Basically, it's the universe striking back at the builders, and Cap leads the way. There's a couple of, like, fist pump, cheering moments in this that I thought were pretty cool. Definitely fanboy moments. The art by both Jerome Opeña and Dustin Weaver definitely complemented each other. I love the fact that it's not a uniform look. Well, I guess it's the closest thing you can get to a uniform look that two artists can sort of render on one book, that they're both doing, two distinct parts of. So that part is cool, and it provides a consistently high level of detail, spectacle, and wonder. Can't you tell I wrote this ahead of time?
Agent 7 is the only one that makes notes for this show, and that's
and the Avengers and New Avengers books are necessary reading. I'm just re-emphasizing that point that we were discussing before.
Okay.
Although, am I the only one that when you see that shot of Black Bolt screaming and you see all the shockwaves coming out, that was thinking of Akira? Akira! And the giant mushroom cloud going off over Neo Tokyo.
It's been a while since I've seen that, so I guess my point of reference is a little off.
It has a little bit of that manga anime style to it, and then I saw that, and first thing that came to me.
Nice.
My favorite scene is actually with the unleashing of the Star Brand, actually.
See, a lot of the stuff, I guess because a lot of the stuff is being referenced in the tie-in issues, and they sort of just gloss over it really quickly in the main Infinity series, but like that just came out of nowhere, the whole Star Brand thing. And sometimes I didn't understand, and I forgot to put this in my review, but Star Brand, I guess, blows up a ship or whatever, and then like they're standing on asteroids or whatever celebrating.
Shouldn't they all be dying or suffocating?
Gasping for air. All you see is just raised fists and people screaming, yeah!
I understand where you come from on that.
But supposedly you can read Star Brand's story in Avengers Assemble next week, I think. Okay. Something like that. Anyway, who cares? New Avengers number 10, Infinity tie-in. I enjoyed this issue. I'm trying to think. I actually need to start thinking of my click of the week before I get on the show. Because I'm going to say this might be my choice right now. Because I read it.
That's funny.
I read it yesterday, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. What I enjoyed about it would be Mike Deodato's art, for one. He's been killing it on this series.
And he sort of gives, another third piece of, like, sort of consistent, like, there's a consistent look between New Avengers and Infinity book. Not so much with Lionel Yu, but there's definitely much more of a unified look between New Avengers and Infinity book.
I like that, like the Illuminati got together and they were like, kind of realized, you know, wow, we haven't been taking time out to check on one another. We've kind of been running ragged, you know. We've all been defending different parts of Earth, you know. Namor. Namor, how's Atlantis? Black Panther, how's Wakanda? How's New York? And, you know, they all gave their responses and search for Thanos' son. And I like how having Maximus talk for Black Bolt. But
Yeah, and then there's even the threat of another incursion to boot, you know, like another planet, you know, another reality, invading our own, so, or at least the Marvel 616. So, there's all sorts of stuff happening in New Avengers. I like this book as well. There's definitely a lot of intrigue in this issue.
I'm trying to think, is there anything else from this I liked? There's some stuff.
Oh, there's a lot of tension. Doctor
Strange.
Yeah, there's a lot of tension above and below the surface in the story, right?
Yeah. My favorite caption or panel or page would be the look that Black Panther and Namor gave each other at one point. It was like there's no words in the panels. It was just dirty looks. But that's New Avengers.
Right, and you have to give Deodato credit because Black Panther, you know, it's kind of hard to give a dirty look. Well, I guess it's easy to give a dirty look with just the eyes, so that was pretty well done.
Something else that's I've been saying I'm enjoying this, the Inhuman stuff. I will say it just seems like it's been so abrupt. It just came out. I can see, like, seeds were planted, maybe stuff with why Thanos cares about the Inhumans before Infinity started. I mean, or like even with New Avengers, because that's where Black Bolt's been appearing. It's like it's been focusing more on the incursions, more on the Black Panther Namor feud, and then also in like once Avengers and New Avengers start there. Was it lead up to Infinity? Then all of a sudden, the Inhumans became a part of the story, and it's like, huh? That just came out of nowhere. That was kind of odd to me.
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but you know, Thanos' whole involvement in this has just been, you know, they're telling us but not showing us, and that's what I don't appreciate. The Thanos limited series established, you know, sort of the reason why he's doing this, but they just come out and say it. They don't show, you know, they show it, but it's told in flashback, and it's just very, it's not very well, it's not done well at all, in my opinion.
Okay. Savage Wolverine, number 8.
Which
the end of Zeb Wells and Joe Madureira's arc.
I actually read this, and I have not read the other parts of this arc before this.
What'd you think?
But I enjoyed it. First of all, the artwork was beautiful in this.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I was just kind of dumbfounded flipping through it, how just amazingly awesome it looked.
It's kinetic. It moved.
Well, and it's got that fully painted style on top of his traditional, you know, comic pencils and inks. So right. It had that blend to it that, and I was just really intrigued by it. Even though I hadn't read the story, you know, it's kind of a follow up with the whole Shadowland and Kingpin being head of the hand and stuff. So I kind of had a rough idea of what was going on anyway. So I didn't have any problem jumping into it, and I really enjoyed it a lot.
I will say I didn't enjoy this issue as much as the other two. It all just kind of wrapped up too neatly.
Conveniently, yeah.
Yeah, too conveniently. But, I mean, it's a out-of-continuity Wolverine book, so it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, and, like, I haven't read the other parts to it, so I don't have a reference.
Well, I mean, with the developments that occurred in this book regarding Wilson Fisk, you know, the Kingpin, I don't know if this is completely out of continuity. I think it's in continuity, just out of chronology. You know, it's not in proper order. Because, you know, Wolverine's still got his healing factor in this.
And... Well, on the first page when they did the recap, see, I read the little recap page, and it does say something like, hey, this book happened before last October, so don't get all messed up that it's out of continuity.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And they put that on the first issue.
Exactly. Of the arc too. Right. So it's just out of order so much. It's out of order more so than it is out of continuity. Because I think it definitely affects, you know, the continuity.
And the only reason for that was this was originally supposed to have happened in Avenging Spider-Man, back when Zeb Wells and Joe Madureira were when they kicked off that series.
Right.
So it's kind of been sitting around for a while. And they turned it from a Spider-Man-centric story kind of into a Wolverine one, with Spider-Man kind of like the guest, not even really a guest star, because he just appeared at the end of the... In the beginning of the first issue and the end of the last issue. Superior Carnage 3 of 5. Forgot that came out this week.
Didn't read it.
I will.
No.
Has anyone read any of the other issues? Oh,
flashy cover. I read issues 1 and 2.
It's, okay.
I mean, it's a Carnage series. mostly dealing with the wizard trying to get Carnage as a weapon.
Really? The Wizard?
Yeah. I think that's who that was. Yeah. Wizard and another cohort of his helping him. Who's the guy with the like a gun as a fist or whatever? I think he showed up in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon with the Wizard.
The gun as a...
Anyway.
You mean the guy that shot glue, the Trapster, Peace Block Pete?
No, not Trapster. Oh, another guy. He's like a robot, and he's got like a... His fist is like a cylinder with the little pole sticking out, a little short pole.
Claw.
Yeah,
not a robot. He's made of sound, solid sound.
That guy.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Superior Spider-Man number 18, which I read, should have reviewed, because I still got time.
You read this, right, Dirt? What do you think?
Yeah, I like Superior Spider-Man in general, but this...
Didn't like this because Spidey Ock was starting to get frustrated.
Well, he's I don't know how to say it. Before, he's always been confident, and his arrogance came from the fact that everything was going correctly, and now that things aren't going, he's not, like, learning.
He's not reacting anything. Well.
Yeah, like, there's no humility from the fact that he makes a mistake. Hmm. And I'm guessing because there's this big storyline coming up where Doc Ock returns. So I don't know if you saw that, but they sent out little postcards to the comic book shops. So I'm not sure exactly what's the long-term plan here. But I was reading this one. I just really didn't enjoy it because the character that I had enjoyed is now starting to take this – turn where I don't like him as much anymore, and
the what's the phrase I'm looking for? The
seeds of discontent.
The walls are cracking.
Yeah. I enjoyed this issue. See, I enjoy seeing Spidey Ock get frustrated. You know, it makes me want to stab him even more.
You're just jealous that he has a midget girlfriend and you don't have a midget girlfriend.
Oh, just wait till something happens to her.
Better not.
Internet message boards will flame on.
Where's the American Society for the Defense of Midgets?
She gets stuffed in a. She gets killed and stuffed into a mini fridge. I'm gonna.
Oh no!
Mini fridge.
That's awful.
You're so wrong.
That is awful.
Somehow, Thor: God of Thunder issue came out this week that evaded me.
Really?
Yes, I did not know that. Number 13. And this starts off. This kicks off the Malekith arc.
Dirt, did you read this?
No.
I read it. So this is the beginning of the Malekith story that reintroduces Malekith the Accursed back to the Marvel U. Readers of the Simonson run of Thor will appreciate the way this issue reads. You know, Jason Aaron has written some of the most compelling Thor stories in a long time. Ron Garney's art is as sketchy as ever. The colors by Ives Svorchina really accentuate the pencils by Garney. It appears that the colors were applied directly to pencil art without any inking. So that definitely gave the book a different look. I give Svorchina a lot of credit. Garney's pencils are often kind of flat, but without really good inks, without anyone spotting the black. So the colors here really accentuate and really give the art some depth. So I'm hoping that the melding of these two parts of the art continue to be good. Because, if they're not going to do inks and the colorist changes or if the colorist isn't doing as good a job, it may not look as nice. But the story itself is told very well, I think. And, if you enjoyed the gore, the God Killer storyline, I think you can just jump right back on and read this and enjoy it. I'm enjoying this. I think this is this was a close second to because I did, what was it, 2 weeks ago? There was that Thor issue, that was an epilogue to the God Killer storyline was my click of the week. This was almost mine for this week.
Yeah, a lot. Thor would have been my pick of the week a lot of weeks if we had started that before. Sorry, click of the week during the God Gore, the God Butcher story.
Yeah, actually, I just checked, and Marvel did not send this out as an advance review copy, so that may be why it snuck past you.
Yeah. Grr. And actually, Thor had been on the list for a while. Strange.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
This is a great book. Great book.
Thunderbolts number 15.
I read this. Anybody else?
No. I haven't, but I will.
So remember I was talking before about the tie-ins that are like actually tie-ins in the traditional sense. This is one of them. You do not have to read this to understand what's going on in Infinity, but there's a a wonderfully cute scene in this issue involving Deadpool and a little girl while he's riding on the one train in the New York City subway system, which is pretty cool.
Technical difficulties over there, Dirt?
Yeah, a little bit.
Gremlins in the system.
Charles Soule is the writer of Thunderbolt, so
okay,
something to look out for. And anyone interested in learning more about him, Newsarama had an in-depth interview with him a couple of days ago, so that should still be up on the homepage somewhere.
Okay.
He's also a lawyer and a musician.
No kidding.
Did not know that. This is like his side gig.
Yeah.
A nice hobby.
Yeah, no, right?
Seriously, I'd like to have a nice hobby like that.
Because he's like, he was like, you know, yes, he's a comic book writer, but he's been a lawyer for like 15 years now. And he's kind of like, he's got, I guess, his own firm or something like that. And he was like,
wow.
You know, he's like, you know, starting my own firm and, you know, building it from the ground up and up to something that's been out or, you know, been open for this many years. He doesn't want to just dump it. So he'll always still do that and along with writing comics.
Wow. Kudos to him. More power to him. I mean, Marjorie Liu? She's an attorney also. I don't know if she practices.
Yeah, they named a couple of other,
right?
Like Brad Meltzer. I think him and Brad Meltzer graduated from the same school to the same school, law school.
Interesting.
Ultimate Comics X-Men 31. I'm sure Doug read that.
I did. I'm trying to find the cover here real quick. There it is.
Cool.
I did not read this.
Trying to think. What came to my mind reading this one is a conversation that we had on this show a couple weeks ago where we were talking about, you were a big fan of Ultimate Spider-Man, so you were giving the other Ultimate books a shot, and Ultimates worked for you, but this one didn't.
Right.
And it occurred to me as I was reading this one, part of the reason why, it is not, it's really not built for new readers, because in this one, Jean Grey in her mutant world, she moves another piece on the chessboard, like she starts, this other side plan that you'd kind of heard about. She's now pushing to the forefront in her battle against Utopia and Kitty Pryde and those mutants, and it's one of those things where I realize that that part of the story only works if you read the last issue where something happened, if you read the issue before that where something happened, if you read the issue before that where something happened. Like, it started to really kind of gel in my mind how much it is stacked upon itself as the series goes along. And I think it's great if you've been reading the series for, you know, at least like the last 15 issues or so, like they really do kind of snowball along and they do a good job of building that story. But it did occur to me that this is nearly impossible for someone to jump in, you know, at any point this month or the last, 6 months. There's really no good point where you could have jumped in and this would have made any sense to you. So it kind of took me back to that conversation where we had. I'm like, yeah, I can see exactly why this book didn't work for you. And part of the reason why it didn't work for you is the reason why I like it so much, because I have been reading it the whole time.
And it's funny because that's something I enjoy about my X-Men books is the continuity in it.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I know the continuity, so that's the reason I like it. But the Ultimate Universe, I'm clueless, so
yeah, it's like you'd have to go back 2 years, and start reading.
Okay. Uncanny X-Men number 12, Battle of the Atom crossover. Actually it's just made part of the main story. I enjoyed Bakalo's art on this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember what all happened.
You got the heel turn from Emma Frost, so that made no sense.
Yeah, wait, a heel turn? Oh yeah, see, because he contacted the.
I don't know if it's a heel turn per se.
Contacted the X-Men and told them where they were. She gave away their location, right?
Right.
Well, there was the whole thing where it's like she disagrees with Scott until Jean Grey of the future shows up, and then she's willing to go back on everything she believes just because she hates Jean Grey from the future.
Yeah, she was okay with young Jean, but when she saw...
Well, no, it's like she wanted them to go back. She's right. Like, they have to go back. But then as soon as old Jean Grey shows up and says they have to go back, she's like, oh, well, if she's for it, then I'm against it.
You know how it is when exes get around each other.
That's yeah, right. I know, but that That's was right. a little too 90210-ish for me.
Oh, no. That's
too much, too much Brenda and Kelly.
Yeah. Oh, like, you went back to Brenda and Kelly.
Like, you remember the names. That's...
That is funny.
I was deep into 90210.
Yeah, was. That is was. Funny.
So
I know that other fan page you got running.
Hey, SoapNet's not a channel for nothing.
So I just wanted to mention something that was on my mind about this. You know, I think the crux of the story is that it's supposed to go against, you know, what everyone's basic understanding, even though, you know, time travel is different in, you know, according to so many different writers, and even in the Marvel Universe, it's sort of a fluid concept right now. Time travel and, like, what the ramifications are if, you know, you change something, you know, I don't know if the butterfly effect is completely, a rule in Marvel time travel, but, you know, I believe, you know, most readers still believe that the original X-Men need to go back in time and, you know, this whole fight of, oh, they should stay and, you know, determine what's right for themselves. It still doesn't make sense. It's still, you know, it's still sort of nags at the, maybe not even at the back of your mind, but the forefront of your mind that, you know, this is still wrong and they should just go back. It sort of feels wrong. And that's what Bendis is playing on, which I can understand why he's doing it, but it's still, you know, it still feels like, you know, what you're reading. So why are you arguing? This makes no sense.
There's a whole lot of
Is there a whole lot of Bendis mumbo jumbo going on?
Yeah, thank you. That's what I was trying to get to. I was going to say, there's a lot of the debate.
Yeah, it's like, I want to do what I want to do. Let me do it.
Actually, X-Men, the previous issue part of the crossover, X-Men number 4 or 5, whatever it was, 5. Right. It was the same way. A lot of I did like that. Ben didn't write it. Brian Wood sort of explained young Jean Grey's point of view of, like, you know, she doesn't want to go back because if she just goes back, she's gonna live her life and die twice.
But
this issue of Uncanny sort of, like Dirt said, more Bendis mumbo jumbo. But at least his mumbo jumbo is just dialogue,
right?
Unlike Hickman's, which is
concepts.
Yeah. Speaking of which, there should be when's another East of West coming out? More stuff I don't understand. And I'll skip that rant.
That's funny.
It's getting late. I say that's about it for Marvel.
Yeah, because no one's reading X-Men Legacy, right?
Right. I think I'm probably the only one reading Venom.
Venom, X-Men Legacy.
Oh, I skipped Secret Avengers. I said I was going to stop reading that anyway.
Morbius,
you know what?
Max.
You know what's funny about Secret Avengers this month? That it was a lot more super cool spy stuff in this issue than there has been in a long time. And there's a cool return in this. I won't spoil it, but there's, you know, the hopefully there's going to be some action ramping up now that a new potential member of the Secret Avengers is showing up. So
I remember last issue, something was revealed about Mockingbird, wasn't it? I forget now though.
Well, she's in deep cover on AIM Island, but this issue totally skips that.
Yeah, I'm done with Secret Avengers.
Right, it definitely. You know, what's funny is that the sequencing in the stories it's disjointed. It makes it very hard to follow. I enjoyed this as a standalone issue more so than it would be a continuation from last month's issue. Believe it or not.
All I know is Avengers AI has taken Secret Avengers' place for me.
Oh my goodness!
Until I get fed up with that.
Avengers AI could be pretty close to the chopping block online.
Could be anytime soon.
Yeah, for me.
Let's see. Valiant had two books out, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, Ezio Man of War came out this week?
Yep.
Damn, I got to read that. Okay, I guess I'll start there. Ezio Man of War number 17. I'm enjoying Valiant. I'm adding a book slowly. Each like month, I add like a new book of theirs.
I liked Eternal Warrior last week. That was my click of the week.
You liked it more than I did. I mean, it was cool. The art was kind of, I mean, it looked nice, but there was a lot of parts of it I didn't understand what was going on.
Okay.
But Ezio, I'm enjoying. I'm assuming this is all leading to Unity when it starts. And let's see, Bloodshot and Hardcore number 14, which replaced just the regular Bloodshot title. Oh. That's another book I need to start reading.
We didn't get that one. We got Ezio and Harbinger this week.
Yeah, I see that. Harbinger number 16. I haven't started reading this one yet, but I at least want to mention Valiant. And that should be it.
Yeah, that's it.
So is it click of the week time?
Yes, it is.
I'll go ahead and do mine first. I already mentioned it earlier. New Avengers number 10, Infinity Titan.
Nice.
Pick nice. three words to describe it.
Mike Deodato art.
That works.
All right.
Okay, I'll pick three more. Illuminati. Tension builds.
That's good.
I'm good with words like that.
That's good.
I'm good with word games. Son.
That's good. Okay, all right. Who wants to go next? I'll go next. My click of the week was stated fairly early on. It was Infinity number 3.
Three words. Go.
Cap, hell yeah. There's a couple of scenes I was just like, yeah. So that was pretty fun.
There you go.
So Dream Thief,
yes.
That's gonna be mine. Three words. That stupid me for starting this. Art and story. There you go.
Wait, there's no
Two tones in one.
Simple yet satisfying. How about that?
There you go. That works.
Mixed Marvel Arts, going back to Secret Avengers, says, this issue of Secret Avengers felt a lot like a spiritual successor of Secret Warriors by Hickman. That's another series I want to go back and read.
Yes, I agree with that. That's a good comparison.
Cool. So that should be the show for tonight. Don't think I've forgotten anything.
Yeah, I don't think there's a non-superhero book of the week that I ran across this week. So
Dream Thief.
Gonna have to wait.
Dream Thief. Dirt already beat us to it. I don't even know if we had to pick a non-superhero.
Book. Oh no, that was something I was doing, and then
Click
of the week became for everyone.
I about to say we're already in enough independent stuff now that we all mentioned stuff. Okay. So I want to thank everyone for tuning into tonight's show. Been another fun episode. Thanks to Mitch Marvel Arts for tuning in live. You can follow them on their Twitter account at Mitch Marvel Arts, and they have a podcast show. And I'm assuming it's on their website that's on their Twitter account, hopefully. But it says sicklygazelle.wordpress.com.
I think they're on iTunes also.
Okay. iTunes, check them out. And shout outs to regular viewer and listener Dork Geekus, who tried to watch tonight's show, but he kept tweeting me saying that Twitter YouTube video was freezing on him for some reason.
Boo.
And he tried reloading a couple times, but
that's because the NSA is currently hacking into his data stream and copying everything he's watching.
And What was that you were displaying on the show, on the screen earlier, Dirt?
Okay. I won't even say it.
So, yes, go to iTunes and Stitcher Radio to subscribe to this podcast show and listen to previous shows. Follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. You see, for those on watching the video, you see me. I'm at TimDogg98. Dirt is at PCN underscore Dirt. And Agent 70 is at Agent underscore 70. So once again, this is the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Peace.
Song.